Welcome. This is William Evans, and we're shifting gears. Our guest today is the Carbondale artist, Philip Hone Williams. Welcome, Philip.
Hello. Glad to be here.
You became an artist early in your career as a sound engineer. You were fascinated with sound as an artistic medium.
That's correct. Yes, I was.
And you figured out how to support yourself that way in film.
I did. I figured that if I could freelance in the film business as a sound engineer, I would be able to support the equipment that I really needed to make my sound tapes or my sound trips, as I call them, musique concrète. And that worked pretty well. I ended up freelancing as a sound engineer, actually traveled all over the world doing it, collecting sound effects, and those sound effects kind of became my palette for the work that I did for myself.
And eventually you accumulated a fairly large library.
Quite a large library. I tried to get a handle on it. That was like in the early 80s when desktop computers first started to show up for home use. And I decided that there had to be something in the computer. I decided there had to be something in the computer that would help me kind of get a handle on this burgeoning library of sound effects. So I bought a computer and got very involved with computers and essentially bailed out of the sound business into the computer business.
And along the way discovered that the computer could be an artistic tool.
I did. Not the desktop computers back in the early 80s. They really didn't have the software yet to do it. So I made my living at that time essentially freelancing as a programmer for small business applications. And that was a very good time to do it because there are a lot of small businesses just getting into computers. But then late 80s, early 90s, the software started coming out that really did make it a great visual creative tool like Photoshop, CorelDRAW, things like that. And so I sort of began morphing over into more illustration and less programming.
And then I remember you told me along the way you also realized the computer was a source of information that couldn't be ignored any longer.
That's true. I think there's many people, organizations around the world that discovered that about the same time. It's an incredible medium for getting the word out in one way or another, no matter what kind of word it is.
And you begin to discover there were some things going wrong.
I began to certainly confirm that there were things going wrong in the world. And that became sort of an undercurrent for kind of the art that I began working on. It kind of crept in. I almost couldn't help doing it. I'm working on paintings right now, and I've sort of thought to myself, well, I think I'll just do some kind of beautiful paintings. But I get started on one, and somehow or another, these world problems begin creeping in, and I can't kind of get away from it.
And one of the ones you realized that we'd been told a story about that was not the accurate story was the Gulf of Tonkin and the war in Vietnam.
That was when that information came out, it kind of changed my view of our government, kind of changed my view of how leaders really operate. And that was for me, who grew up in an atmosphere where you respected your elders and you respected authority, that became a kind of a really hard thing to kind of absorb, but I did, and I began using it.
And so, one of the things that I would infer from what you've told me is that respecting your elders requires hearing the truth.
It certainly does.
And that we got into Vietnam based on a lie.
Based on a lie, and then when McNamara came out some years later and actually said, yes, it was a lie, that was, in one sense, it was nice to hear, but in another sense, it confirmed how things really are working.
Right. And so you found your way as an illustrator For a children's magazine, Highlights.
Highlights magazine, right. I did a lot of work. I spent 4 years doing a page a month for Highlights magazine. They were a lot of fun. There wasn't a whole lot of social commentary in those paintings, but they developed. But I did develop a style that I'm now using, not for children, but for more adult work, adult illustrations. But that was a great gig. I really enjoyed doing that. I still have a couple children's books out that they're available on Amazon right now, and I would like to do some more children's work. But at this point in my life, I'm 73, and there's you got to kind of choose your things carefully at this point.
Right.
And painting still is my main obsession, so to speak.
And the style you developed for Highlights magazine is what kind of style? How would you describe it?
Well, one of my painting gods, so to speak, is Peter Bruegel the Elder, and he puts together these large paintings with lots of little figures, characters in them doing lots of different things. I really like that. It's like it's a trip for the eye. Like the sound tapes I used to make were trips for the ear. These are kind of trips for the eye. They're not beautiful paintings like onions and grapes and still lifes and things like that. They're more narrative stories about a particular subject.
And so you developed a narrative storytelling style.
Yep, and I had one name for it, which I decided to change. Now it's called Seriously Audacious Situational Surrealism, or SAS for short. The earlier one, you might want to cut this out, was Politically Incorrect Situational Surrealism, and that was PISS for short. But I decided to use a different name for a different acronym.
You retired from working with Highlights in 2008.
Yeah,
and you had the opportunity to look back and reflect on your life and also where you wanted to go.
Yeah, I had the very good fortune of being able to retire and not have to worry about supporting a family or myself. And so it gave me at the age of late 60s, mid-60s, suddenly a time to really reflect about what I really wanted to do. Things I'd thought about doing all my life. And one of those was to kind of pull all those strings together and focus on a single, kind of like a single task or a single subject. And that turned out to be painting these large paintings that I'm working on.
And so you talked about Peter Bruegel, and he painted vast stories, the Tower of Babel and the Seven Deadly Sins and the Hunters.
The Four Seasons he did were beautiful paintings.
Right. And so with that inspiration and your experience, you begin to then reflect on what was happening, and you had a good memory for the facts that became apparent and wove those into these vast paintings, but you also did it with humor.
With humor and surrealism. I sometimes think that the surrealism is almost a cop-out because it really allows me to do just about anything. And if I call it surreal, no one can really say it's the wrong or the right. It's not really a cop-out. It's just a way of getting at the subject from a different angle, I think.
And you said to me you wouldn't be doing it if you couldn't put some humor into it.
And I wouldn't do it if I couldn't. I wouldn't deal with the subject unless I could get some humor into it.
And you take on some big subjects that are difficult, so it's sometimes a dark humor.
It is. It is. Like the last one I did, which was What the Frack, the Violation of Mother Earth. I have some characters in that painting. Three children sitting around a kitchen sink toasting marshmallows out of the water faucet because there's fire coming out of the water faucet. And then there's another little incident in the painting where a father is lighting his barbecue with the water hose, except there's fire coming out of the water hose, and his two kids are standing by watching. Things like that. It's kind of dark humor for sure.
Well, and as I've looked at these paintings of yours, I realize how important it is to take time because the story flows out of the details.
Yes. Yes. I generally have a kind of an overall concept when I'm starting one of those paintings, but they really develop. The most important times, obviously, is putting together the composition, coming up with the initial ideas and getting them organized in such a way that composed well. And that process may take 4 or 5 weeks for one of these paintings. And it kind of always kind of develops out of one central drawing, which then kind of evolves and expands and things move around. One of the things, I draw them all on a what's called a Wacom direct draw screen. It's a computerized drawing. It's like a pencil on steroids, really. It's wonderful. And it's very easy then to move components around and develop a composition that really works well. So that's essentially how I do it. I start with an overall concept, but no real idea about the details. And then one major detail begins to kind of grow and expand and evolve into the whole composition.
When I first asked you what the story was behind those paintings, you told me you were having fun.
For sure. I wouldn't do them if I weren't having fun either. I love the painting. I love the stages of the painting. I love putting the panels together that I work on. I love the part that I have the most enjoyment with is developing that initial composition, the initial drawing. When I get to the painting, that's a lot of fun too, but that's really just finishing the job off, so to speak. It's putting in the color, painting, skillfully. But from beginning to end, there's no part in the process that I don't really enjoy.
Well, and they're big canvases and complex, intense stories. How can people see these? How can they get a look at them?
Well, I have a website, which is philiphonewilliams.com. The hone is H-O-N-E, like a honing stone. All one word, no spaces, philiphonewilliams.com. I also, when I'm finished the large paintings, I pull out some of the characters and do separate little individual character portraits of them. So a lot of those portraits are also on the website. They're much smaller. They're only about 17 inches by 22 inches. The large paintings are about 4 feet by 6 feet. But I really enjoy doing that, too, because it's kind of taking a character out of the big painting and kind of painting him as if he were an actor in real life, just kind of waiting for his position in the painting. And they're fun to do.
This is William Evans. You're listening to Shifting Gears. I'm speaking with the Carbondale artist, Philip Hone Williams. What have you learned as a result of doing these extraordinary surrealistic paintings?
I've learned, what I was going to say was I've essentially confirmed in my own mind who I am and that my thinking about things is correct, at least for me. I've learned to be confident, too. They've given me a confidence. Throughout my life, I've always done a lot of exploring, but I've never really taken ideas and really taken them to the final end. I've just kind of explored. And this process that I'm going through now is pulling all of those explorations, whether they be in sound, whether they be, I used to do a lot of welding sculpture. I used to do woodworking, built furniture, things like that. All of those things have a creative underpinning that I'm now pulling together, not the actual process of woodwork or the process of working with sound, but the creative underpinning that makes that happen. I've now found a real vehicle in which I can follow through with it to the end. And that's something that I never had until I was like really in my late 60s.
And so in the course of doing this, you've discovered who you really are.
Exactly, yeah.
And figured out how to stand up and talk about a truth that other people don't seem to want to look at.
Hopefully.
I remember you're also telling me that when you were 10, 12 years old that you you had the sense it would be about age 60 when you'd figure out how to find your place in this world.
Yeah, I did. I was I had a learning problems. I was a dyslexic, and went to some special schools and never did very well in school, and always kind of was always never quite understanding what was going on around me. And that may have also been because a lot of what was going around me was in the environment that I lived was not truthful. I don't know. I'm not really sure. But I didn't really totally understand how things were working. So I thought to myself I'd have to kind of live by my wits for a while and kind of had the thought that maybe when I was in my 60s, I'd be able to pull it all together and do something. And I don't know whether because I thought that that's the way it's working, but that is the way it's working.
All right. And so you're being yourself in the world of surrealism.
Mm-hmm.
What's surrealism mean?
That's a good question. I don't think most surrealists really understand what surrealism means, including myself. It's just a way of letting it's like free thought. Just a way of letting ideas drift in and somehow or another getting them realized in whatever medium you're working in. And as I said before, I think it's a way of saying things in such a way that it's difficult for people to really find fault with it, other than, I don't like the way that looks. So I don't know. And it's fun. It's fun to kind of let your mind go and begin a drawing and not really know how it's going to end, but it comes out in the end anyway, in some really nice way or miraculous way.
And if people want to physically see your art, mm-hmm. where can they go?
In Carbondale, there's a building called the Third Street Center, which is at 520 South 3rd Street, filled with a number of different organizations and five or six artists, I being one. And if you go to the 3rd Street Station, you can visit my studio, 3rd Street Center. You can visit my studio, which is Studio 10, but also in the main room called the Callaway Room. I have a couple large paintings hanging in there, the large paintings, none of the smaller portraits, but the large paintings. But I'm generally there during the day, and anyone can come in anytime they want. I welcome visitors.
You also had mentioned briefly these three children's books. Can you say a little bit more about what's behind those books? I looked at them. They're wonderful, beautifully illustrated, and age appropriate. But say a little more about what moved you to do the children's books.
Well, I did them because I was interested in doing children's books. At that time, I was doing a lot of children's illustration for Highlights Magazine and various other magazines. So I thought I'd give it a shot, see what I could do with it. And I did, during that period of time, I did about three of them. I also did one very early on in the 60s and 70s, which I may revise at some point. But the three that I did then, one of them is called Moo Words, and it's really just pictures with single words, and the single words are illustrated with the pictures, like swing or pillow or soft, rope, brush. And each one of those words have an illustration kind of illustrating the word. And they're really meant for 2 or 3 year olds, children before they really have any kind of a grasp of language, just kind of associating words with images. The other two are for older children, 5 or 6, 7 years old, whatever. One is called Lucky Lou Gets Dressed. And it's about a kid who is looking for his favorite shirt and he can't find it. So he figures his mother has thrown it in the laundry basket. So he dives into the laundry basket and gets into a very, you might say, surrealistic trip through the laundry basket. And it's pretty interesting. It comes out in the end and his mother actually does have the shirt because she had been washing it. It was not in the laundry basket. It was in the washer. So it ends up nice. The kid gets a shirt, and he also gets a pair of red socks that he was looking for. The other one is called The Cat Who Thought His Tail Was an Icicle. And it's about a cat who likes to get up on the roof in the wintertime, sit around with his tail hanging down along with the icicles. And it goes through the four seasons. And the only season he really likes is the winter season, because that's when the icicles are. So the whole story is about one kind of year's trip for this cat through the spring, through the summer, through the fall, and then finally back into the winter. For instance, in the summertime, he loves to sit on top of the icebox. He doesn't know why, but for some reason, he relates that to the winter. Or it's not an icebox anymore, is it? It's a refrigerator. I remember when I grew up, we had an icebox.
I remember that as well. And for adults, you're this storyteller using art to give form to unspoken stories and truths. So in an ocean of falsehood over the land, your works are islands of truth.
I like to think of it that way. I hope that the surrealism and the imagination and the humor does not get in the way of that. But that certainly is one of the underlying motivations for doing them.
And there are people who are more comfortable being lied to than doing the hard work of dealing with the truth. And inevitably, I suspect they may find your works disturbing.
I think that could probably be so. I haven't run into anyone yet who said that. But then they haven't been out in the world very much yet either. I expect that'll happen. Certainly, if Dick Cheney saw my fracking picture, he might have a problem with it. In fact, I thought at one point maybe he would buy it and then he'd burn it.
Well, it takes some sweat to deal with the truth, particularly when you have a habit of doing otherwise.
Yeah.
Thomas Jefferson said that honesty is the basis of good government.
Well, that's probably true. I don't know how it actually works out in the end, but that's a good saying. Still working on this SAS series, as I said, the seriously audacious situational surrealism. I've got 7 of them done. I'm going to finish up with 10 or 12 and then begin seriously looking for a venue to show them in, hopefully in a large metropolitan area like Los Angeles or San Francisco, maybe Chicago, New York. I'm not really sure where, but I'm at the point now where I have a critical mass, so to speak, and I can begin actually approaching people and say, have a look, what do you think? So I'm hoping that'll happen.
Thank you, Philip.
You're most welcome, Will.
This is William Evans. You've been listening to Shifting Gears. I've been speaking with Philip Hone Williams, a surrealistic artist here in Carbondale. This is KDNK. Thank you for listening.